You're listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast, where we discuss current events, social issues, religious trends, and noteworthy news from a biblical perspective. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for tuning into the newest episode of the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Soaker. This episode is being released on June 9th, 2022. This week we're going to be talking about the sex abuse scandal within the Southern Baptist Convention. After mentioning this briefly a couple weeks ago in our monthly news roundup, I wanted to spend some more time talking about it because there's a lot to discuss. So we're going to consider some lessons from that in our episode today. For links to this story as well as related materials, check out the show notes for this episode at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/060922. Now for our story this week. Southern Baptist leaders release sex abuser database they kept secret for years. From the Washington Post, Southern Baptist leaders on Thursday evening released a list of alleged church-related sexual abuse offenders that denomination heads had kept secret for more than a decade. The Executive Committee for the Southern Baptist Convention said earlier this week it would publish the names after it issued a third-party investigation that suggested a widespread cover-up by top leaders who ignored and even vilified people who came forward with stories of abuse. Let me pause here for just a second. When it says on Thursday or this week, this had been a couple weeks ago that this was released. So keep that in mind that this is about 2 weeks old. We continue reading the story. It says, the database, which an SBC attorney said includes people who have been criminally convicted of abuse and those who have confessed to abuse, is expected to show what top leaders knew behind the scenes while telling Southern Baptists they could not create a list of accused abusers because the denomination is not hierarchical and churches operate independently from one another. A description at the top of the document reads, this is a fluid working document. It consists of more than 600 entries. The date the person was reported and information largely pulled from news articles, compiled from 2007 to 2022. It is incomplete. It has not been proofed. It has not been adequately researched. It is not Southern Baptist specific, the document reads. It notes that after June 2008, only alleged or convicted names of abusers and titles of articles were cataloged. The release of the database comes 15 years after Christa Brown began sounding the alarm that Southern Baptists needed to keep such a list to prevent abusers from transferring from church to church. She first told SBC leaders in 2004 that she had been abused by a youth pastor who went on to serve in other Southern Baptist churches in multiple states. But the report, published Sunday by the SBC, said she was met with hostility when she suggested the idea in 2007. As Russell Moore said in his piece from Christianity Today, this is not a crisis, this is, to use his term, an apocalypse. We're used to hearing about this type of thing with various scandals in the Catholic Church. However, in that case, at least in my experience, there's been a tendency to point out the requirement of celibacy that is imposed upon priests as a significant contributing factor. However, while a man-made rule of celibacy is a problem, there are obviously other things going on because celibacy would not be a factor here. So what do we need to consider with this scandal? There are 5 points I want us to talk about here today. First, and we're going to start with a point I mentioned in the story 2 weeks ago, but a little bit covering it briefly here. We cannot afford to put our trust in men. As we talked about 2 weeks ago, God is perfect and human beings are not. This is why the psalmist said in Psalm 118, 8 and 9, it is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. We need to make sure that we do not think so highly of others that number one, we believe they could do no wrong, which is why things like this go on as long as they do. Or two, if it is proven that they have committed some terrible crime or have engaged in some morally despicable behavior, that it doesn't cause us to lose our faith. This happens too many times. Our faith needs to be in God, not in men. Men will disappoint us. God never will. No matter what anyone else does, even those that we have looked up to, we must never allow their behavior to turn us away from the Lord. Second point, pride can lead to someone's downfall. Last week, we addressed Pride Month by looking at what the Bible says about pride. We began with Proverbs 16:18. It says, "Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before stumbling." This comes into play in situations like this sex abuse scandal, when someone rises to a certain position and they begin to think that the rules do not apply to them. And even if that's a subconscious thought at first, this is how it often plays out. In that episode 2 weeks ago, we cited the example of Uzziah in 2 Chronicles. And for more on his example, I'll refer you to that episode. We won't get into everything there, but just to summarize, as the king, he was enjoying success and reached the point that he thought he could do pretty much anything, including burning incense on the altar, something that only the priests were permitted to do. God struck him with leprosy as a punishment, but also as a warning for us that no matter what position of importance or prominence we may have, we still have an obligation to follow God's law. Yet those who have been puffed up with pride will often act in ways that they may not have otherwise acted before they got into the position that they're in. Third point is that allegations need to be taken seriously. The wise man wrote in Proverbs 18, verse 17, "The first to plead his case seems right until another comes and examines him." If we only hear one side of the story, we will not have a full understanding of the truth. Now, there has been a push lately to, quote, believe all women when it comes to charges of sexual misconduct and abuse. And with scandals like this one and the cover-up that went on for so long, it's understandable why people are calling for that we need to believe all women. However, while that is understandable, it is not wise, nor is it biblical. We should not automatically believe every allegation of sexual misconduct or anything else. At the same time, it is just as unwise to automatically dismiss them, even if we would be shocked if the allegation was true because of who it was that was being accused. Remember the first point, do not put your trust in men. The lesson is that when serious allegations are made, we don't need to rush to judgment, but we do need to pursue the truth. We cannot sweep an accusation under the rug because we couldn't believe that brother so-and-so would ever do such a thing. Maybe he wouldn't, or maybe he's fooled all of us. Whatever the case, the principle behind passages like Amos 5 verse 24 that says, "Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream," the principle behind that obligates us to try as best as we can to get to the truth so that justice can be done and righteousness can be displayed. So when allegations come up, they do need to be taken seriously, not automatically believed and not automatically dismissed, but taken seriously so that we can investigate them. Fourth point is that bureaucracies are generally inefficient and/or incapable of helping the oppressed. The wise man wrote in Ecclesiastes 5, verse 8, "If you see the oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight. For one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them." Now, the wise man was describing the reality that large bureaucracies are so bloated and inefficient that they are simply incapable of solving the problems of those who are most in need of help. Usually, I cite this verse when making an application about government bureaucracy which I believe is the primary point of that verse. However, the principle would apply really to any bureaucracy, including a religious organization or denomination. Bureaucracies create loopholes. Unintentionally, but they create loopholes. And they allow things to slip through the cracks. Again, it's not intentional. They may have good intentions of setting these things up, but that is what happens. So while it's understandable now that some are arguing that the SBC needs more oversight and centralized control so that this doesn't happen again, no one should expect that that will be what fixes something like this. Preventing this type of thing from happening requires awareness and vigilance at the local level, within local congregations. This is a lesson that we need to take from this, even though I'm not, and probably a lot of people listening to this podcast are not Southern Baptists. This is what we need to take from this, that to prevent this, the way to prevent this is by awareness and vigilance at the local level. Without that, no bureaucracy, no matter how sincere the effort behind establish it, no matter how or what rules are made by the board or oversight committee or whatever you call it, no matter what rules they make, it will not prevent this sort of thing from happening in the future. The fifth point, the last one we'll talk about today. This is another reminder of the importance of local church autonomy. To be fair, Baptist churches are more independent than many other denominations. Officially, the Southern Baptist Convention claims to be a fellowship of churches that cooperate together for missions. It is not an organization that oversees or legislates to the churches. However, even though they claim that each church is autonomous, and if you check out their website, they will say that the churches are autonomous, that they are self-governing, and they have voluntarily become part of this cooperation or this fellowship, but they have voluntarily put themselves together in this group. Not only is this a problem scripturally, but this presents a problem when scandals like this arise legally. Consider the following excerpt from the article that we started with. The SBC has long sought to distance itself from the Catholic Church's sexual abuse scandal by saying its churches were independent from one another. But University of Pennsylvania professor Marcy Hamilton, an expert on laws aimed at preventing child abuse, said the SBC has no standing in distinguishing itself legally from the Catholic Church in terms of its responsibility to victims, be they minors or adults, when incidents happen. The SBC, she said, is the, quote, governing body of the whole church, so they are responsible for the policies and for the cover-up, which is evident, end quote. It goes on and says, as penalties, including billions of dollars, have been levied in the past 20 years against the Catholic Church, Hamilton said, other non-Catholic religious groups have argued that their structure and beliefs make them different when it comes to liability. Southern Baptist and non-denominational groups have said they are too loosely affiliated to be liable. But she said courts have found otherwise when they have looked at other faith groups. For the sake of argument, let's take them at their word that the Southern Baptist Convention exists for the primary purpose of cooperating in missions. This database that has now been released, that previously said it didn't exist, but now it's been released, included 600 entries documenting sexual misconduct or abuse. According to the SBC website, they have over 47,000 what they call cooperating churches, and they have a total membership of over 14 million. So while there were a lot of instances of abuse, 600 that were documented, and those should have been addressed, at the same time, the number of abusers and those who covered up the abuse is still a very small percentage of those in the SBC. However, even though that may be true, the mission work that all of these churches cooperate in, and the vast majority of these churches who had nothing to do with the abuse, but their mission work is going to be hindered by the very thing that was supposed to facilitate their mission work, their tie to the Southern Baptist Convention. That was to help them carry out their mission. Well, now it's going to hinder them in carrying out their mission. The New Testament teaches that local churches are to be autonomous. And we don't have time to get into passages that talk about that, but I will link to an article in the show notes that talks about this. It's called The Blessings of Autonomy. And not only does that article talk about what it means for a church to be autonomous, and this is what the New Testament teaches about that, but it also describes certain blessings or benefits that come by following the divine arrangement, that local churches are autonomous. And in that article, the three blessings that are outlined there are, number one, autonomy helps prevent the spread of error. Number two, autonomy allows churches to work more effectively. And three, autonomy encourages local work. Now, for more on those points, I'll refer you to the article so you can see the argumentation for that. But as we think about this scandal here, really we could add a fourth blessing of autonomy to that list. That autonomy means that we are not legally liable for the sins or the crimes of others. Maybe we need to remember this lesson, that bigger is not always better. We need to be committed to humbly following the Lord and be content to work within our local churches without feeling the need to have some larger or different organization to carry out the work of the church. Look at the Southern Baptist Convention. If we think, well, we can be more effective if these churches are all working together, these churches are somehow tied together and doing this collective work together, whenever you bring more in and you start bringing more people that are involved in this same work, not only are you getting away from the autonomy that the New Testament talks about, but you are also potentially putting yourself on the hook for the responsibility when something like this happens. You can read more about this topic and listen to the episodes that I mentioned that are all, they'll all be linked in the show notes for this episode, so you can check that out. But that's all for this week. Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I hope you found it to be interesting and informative and helpful. You can find all those links that we mentioned at the show notes at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/06-09-22. The Plain Bible Teaching Podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. So if you use those platforms, please subscribe and rate the podcast there. If you know of others who would be interested in hearing this episode, please share it with them, and I would appreciate that. And if you see a news story that you think would make for a good discussion, please share that with me. You can send it to andy@plainbibleteaching.com. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. Also, be sure to sign up for the Plain Bible Teaching Weekly Newsletter. This free newsletter will be delivered to your inbox each Friday with articles, podcasts, videos, sermon outlines, and more. Visit plainbibleteaching.com to subscribe today.